Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Indecision. Overthinking. Second-guessing every choice you make. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Beige on beige on beige. Ugh. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Waiting for the best deals? Spring Black Friday savings are here. Shop early access now at Blinds.com and save big on new custom window treatments. At Blinds.com, shopping online for custom window treatments doesn't mean sacrificing on service, selection, or style. As the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, Blinds.com has hundreds of options to fit any decor and budget. Choose from stylish roller or bamboo shades, blackout options, and more. We even have motorized shades for your patio. DIY, or let our experts handle the heavy lifting. Blinds.com has you covered with free virtual consultations. We'll even send a pro to do the measure and install. Try before you buy with free samples delivered to your door. With over 25 million windows covered, every order's backed with Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday early access now for up to 40% off with minimum purchase, plus a free measure. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
The Orioles farm system, as it a few years ago, maybe the envy of baseball, seemed to be the best by far in all of baseball. Looking at Fangraph's top 50 prospect list, though, it doesn't seem like it's nearly as good as it used to be. And let's go out to the Window Nation fan guest hotline. Eric Longenhagen is Fangraph's lead prospect analyst. He joins us now. And Eric, let's start big picture. Thanks, as always, for joining us, by the way. We appreciate it. How good is this Orioles farm system?
Well, I think it's good. I think that, yeah, like you don't have necessarily pillars of the franchise sitting at the top like you did when you graduated Adley Rutschman into Gunnar Henderson or anything like that. But, you know, the reason the list is 50 guys deep is because that's how deep the farm system is. I'm not sitting here doing 50 write-ups for every org. The Orioles farm system necessitated 50 guys being written up. I think they've got, you know, a little more than 20 high upside talents, like impact talents, in the system, which is like an unusually high number. I think that a lot of these guys are arrow up. You're consistently seeing change ups added throughout the organization this year, velo spikes throughout the organization again, this year. And yeah, I think it's an above-average system. The very top of the list, aside from Samuel Basayo, and really including Basayo at this, you know, snapshot in time, is a little bit distressed because Basayo's elbow is barking for the second straight spring, and Kobe Mayo is struggling and has since his initial promotion, and Chase McDermott is hurt. Those are the three guys who are, like, big upside and near to the big leagues, and all three of them are sort of teetering for one reason or another right now. But I think that I'm very excited by this group, and you know, I wrote as much in the article.
One thing we're trying to kind of get our head around, because we were out of the game so much here, as the organization was, is we know that the international process, like, you're going to miss way more than you hit, even when you give out seven-figure bonuses. Like, that's how the game is played. But, you know, Mike Elias has been here for quite some time now, and they've built up the academy and everything. Like, the fact that the, you know, the Almeidas and the Michael Hernandezes of the world, like, these kids are 20-21 now, and no one's really even popped at low A or anything like that. And Basayo, really. Like, I've seen a lot of Freddie Bencosme. Like, he's kind of interesting, but, like, you've got one position player in the entire organization, Basayo, in the high minors, who has any shot to play right, big league ball for the most part, and the pitching's been sort of scattershot. Is any of that a concern for you?
I think that generally the fact that there is an international program, the Baltimore Orioles like have an international talent pipeline at all, mm-hmm. is an improvement.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they are a risk mitigation franchise generally. They are not the team that's going to give one guy a $4 or $5 million right. bonus internationally and then punt on the rest of that class. And it is disappointing that some of the big dollar guys, as far as Orioles
Brandon Tavera
prospects are concerned,
yeah.
right, like are not really doing anything. But I think when you take this spread it, you know, go wide approach, where you're getting a lot of guys like mid six figure deals, that you're betting on two things. You're betting on your scouts. You're giving them more bites at the apple that way,
mm-hmm.
and your dev staff. And I think that especially the dev staff has proven already to this point, you know, Gunnar Henderson and some of these guys like Jordan Westford, like these are players that the organization has made better after drafting them. And so I think, you know, if that is a core competency that the franchise has, the strategy that you want to take is going to leverage that as often as possible. I think that's what they're doing. I agree with you that, yeah, the Braylon Taveras and the Leandro Arias, like these guys are, you know, mid to bad. I do think, you know, Elvin Garcia is the one where he's got a chance to really blow up this year. So, you know, it's a mixed bag, but I think that in general, the org is trending positively because, you know, this is still just such a new thing. The academy down there is so new, and having one at all is a big, big positive.
Eric, it's always fun looking at all the different publications and what stands out compared to other top 50 lists. And one player that's high on your list is Austin Overn, who's the fourth highest prospect on their top 50. Why are you so high on him?
Yeah, they changed Overn already. Overn was a famous high schooler going to USC. He was going to play football too. And then he really didn't. He was on the football team, but he didn't play, you know, and he just never got any bigger or stronger in college. He never really hit for much power. And he's been radically altered already just in the handful of months he's been in the org. His swing is totally different. He's added muscle and strength. And he's done so without sacrificing any of that, you know, Pac-12, rest in peace, wide receiver speed. And so of the guys in the org, of the position players who have a chance to enter that conversation as you're an everyday player, him and Elvin Garcia are the two where I think they have the best shots. The other guys, some of the other college players who they've drafted recently, I like those guys. I like Enrique Bradfield. I like Griff O'Farrell. I like Vance Honeycutt. They do stuff that I think can allow them to play a big role, mostly on defense for that whole group.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the ones with like real impact upside, besides Basayo and Mayo, Overn, who has been revamped, and Garcia are the other two to me who look like they have that sort of ceiling. And so I have, you know, prioritized them. It's early for Overn. We're going to see how the swing change manifests with his ability to make contact. He didn't play over the weekend. I think, you know, he's got a minor ding of some kind. The org would not tell me when I texted them yesterday, like, hey, what's going on? That my guy hasn't played this weekend. So it sounds minor. But yeah, I think those two guys, the way they've changed over and so drastically already, just gives him ceiling that, you know, Vance Honeycutt, who I don't think is going to hit, but can really play defense.
Yeah.
Or Griff O'Farrell, who makes great contact but really doesn't have any power at all. Same for Enrique Bradfield. Like, Overton's ceiling just looks like it has a chance to be bigger than those dudes now.
Hey, Eric, any chance you can hang around for another segment? We got a lot of questions.
Yeah, let's do it.
Eric Longenhagen, lead prospect analyst for Fangraphs. More with him. We'll get to his thoughts on a number of the Orioles' top prospects, including pitcher Brandon Young, who's probably going to be the next man up in this rotation. What does Eric think of him? We'll ask him next here on The Fan. Let's go back out to the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline, where we continue our conversation with Fangraphs lead prospect analyst Eric Longenhagen. And Eric, thank you for sticking around. We appreciate your time. So let's talk about Brandon Young, who we think is probably going to be in the major leagues in the near future. What do you have him ranked sixth in your Orioles top 50? What do you think of him?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that this men is dry on this guy. He's 26 and a half. He commands four distinct pitches. He's unbelievably poised. And, you know, the start against Charlotte last week, he barely broke a sweat and carried a no-no deep into the game. And he's good. You know, this was a guy whose fastball has punched above its weight, really pretty considerably for like the last two seasons, since like 91, 95, but it's playing like a plus pitch because it has that, you know, that pure vertical ride to it. He's 6'6", so this is a monster extension guy. He's got a gorgeous 12-6 curveball that plays great off of that fastball. And there's a cutter there now, and there's a changeup, and those sort of have, you know, a little bit of glove side action, a little bit of arm side action, respectively, and just gives him four pitches that finish in all the different quadrants of the zone, and he commands them. And, you know, he's 26 and a half, and so, like, from a prospect standpoint, like, this isn't a guy whose baseball card you should go spend $20,000 on or whatever. But, you know, he's a good 4-5 starter on a good team right now. And are you tripping over yourself to hand this guy the ball in, like, game one of a playoff series? Probably not. But every team needs guys like this. You know, the Milwaukee Brewers just traded essentially a first-round pick for Quinn Priester. He's a guy with a six ERA, you know, because they're as badly in need of pitching as the Orioles are. And so to have a guy like this who, you know, the grade I have on Brandon Young, that 45 grade, that's about the grade that I would give a player in that, you know, 33rd overall pick area of a draft. Like, that's what Brandon Young's value as a player is like the equivalent of a late first-round pick, even though, is it sexy? No, he's 26 and a half. He's an undrafted free agent, but the fact that the org has made this out of him is like a very impressive thing, and he's ready for prime time right now.
Do you wonder where the ace potential quality comes from here, though? Because they traded for it for a hot minute with Corbin Burns, right, but didn't back it up with anything. They don't seem like they're going to invest draft capital in pitching just systematically, like, whatsoever. You know, they'd rather try a Honeycutt again after already kind of, right, like after Stowers, Beavers, Fabian, like after kind of going to that type quite a bit, they'd rather go back to that than take a pitcher there. And even the arms you really like in this system, they all have a lot of sort of ifs and buts, and you know what I mean? They probably max out as around a three. Do you wonder about them ever developing anything close to an ace?
I do, yeah. I think there is a certain point where the super talented players really do let you know who they are when they're very young almost all the time. And now there are exceptions to this for sure. Like Corbin Burns was at one point like a two-way player, and you know, it wasn't like Corbin Burns was a first-round pick out of St. Mary's or anything like that. But like, yes, there is a certain point where Andrew Painter is obviously Andrew Painter when he's 18 years old.
Yep.
And Tyler Glass now, for all of his warts as a young pitcher, he is built like that, and he does move like that, and his curveball does too. And you are sort of limiting yourself if you are so process-oriented that you, you know, are taking this volume-based approach to acquiring pitching. Even the trades that they made at the deadline last year, where they moved Moises Chace, they moved Jackson Baumeister, those are guys with a little bit more of the potential that you're talking about.
Yep.
And some of these others, you know, the Michael Foritz of the world, you know, it's good that they are arrow up guys after entering the system, but what is the likelihood that any one of them becomes a Max Scherzer or anything like that? Like, it's pretty low. And so I do think that, you know, again, this is a risk diversification org, and their approach is not to give Corbin Burns that kind of contract. And, you know, here in Arizona, they have paid the price for doing that a couple of times in the last couple of years. You know, Madison Bumgarner did not work out. Zach Greinke was good for a while, and then at the end didn't work out. And when they traded him, they got nothing back for him. Jordan Montgomery didn't work out. And so you could see why they might be apprehensive about doing something like that. But at the same time, you are capping the ceiling of your team if you don't have the high-end pitching. Like, the Phillies just had it, man. If you're going to face the Phillies in the World Series and it's game three and Brandon Young is going out there to face Zach Wheeler, what do you think is going to happen? So Yeah, I do think that they need to be selectively more aggressive, either in the draft or via free agency. I think, you know, Rubenstein seems inclined to spend money, and it would be okay, I think, if you come to him with a clear-headed vision that includes once in a while you're going to get a Madison Bumgarner contract, and that is just part of the price you pay of being a Major League Baseball owner, is that you give a guy like that a contract once in a while. But yeah, I agree with you that they have sort of capped the ceiling on the pitching staff, the way they're approaching things strategically.
Eric, Coby Mayo, you have him listed at first base, but the Orioles are very headstrong having him play third base.
And more third base than first base at Norfolk. Yeah. Make that make sense. And no right field. Never right field. Make that make sense.
Yeah. Are you surprised that they're still trying to force that, Eric? And how do you view Mayo long term?
Yeah, I had Coby projected as a right fielder when he was still in high school, which is a phrase I've uttered, you know, on this show before. He just was never quite the mobile athletic fit of a typical big league third baseman, even though a not so good one. He's an enormous kid. And so, no, to me, the third base thing is a preserve his trade value and let's trade him to one of these teams that, you know, doesn't really care about eyeball scouting reports, just the fact that he's played third base and his numbers, you know, his defensive metrics in the minors look like this, is enough for us to buy that he can play third base. And so let's trade for this guy as if he has the value of a third baseman. The gap between third base and first base in terms of defensive value, I really think third base, like after shortstop, center field, and catcher, I think third base is next. I think shifting has made second base less valuable and hard to play than it used to be. And I think third base has kind of usurped it for me in terms of like positional value. Coby can't play third base. You know, I would have liked to have seen him try right field long before this.
Yep.
Because you are kind of crunching his developmental timeline at this point. Like, he's on the 40 man. You only have so many option years to work with. You only have so much time to find a real defensive home for him. And, you know, first base DH, like the bar at that position is so high. Because not only are you dealing with the fact that Paul Goldschmidt plays that position and, you know, all these other A-plus level sluggers, but when Hanley Ramirez ages out of shortstop, he plays there. And when Victor Martinez can't play catcher anymore, he plays there. And so you're kind of getting it from both ends at first base when you look across the big league player population. You don't have to go very far before, you know, guys like Luke Voit and Jesus Aguilar and Justin Bour, like, those are pretty marginal guys who get DFA'd and hop around, and yeah, they make an all-star team, and that's great. But when you look at the entire player population, those guys are kind of freely available. Like Christian Walker was just freely available for anyone to pick him up a bunch of times, and later becomes this, you know, type of thing that he became. And so when you view Coby Mayo in that light as a first baseman, the way he feels is like way less valuable than, you know, candidly, like the way he's ranked on this list is just fingers crossed that he bounces back and has enough power to be, you know, that valuable. But guys like Chris Carter, you know, they have a relatively short shelf life, and their value in the grand scheme of things is like pretty marginal. There's just a lot of guys like that, and we are sort of trending toward that for Mayo.
Yeah, Eric, this was great. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Anytime, guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Eric Longenhagen, Fangraphs lead prospect analyst.
Check it out.
Hey, we'll come back, hit the hot corner, and recap what was a struggle for Tomoyuki Sugano on Saturday. But the Orioles actually showed some fight on Saturday. Is that something we could see replicated? We'll discuss hot corner next here on The Fan.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight,
you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Santander, high and deep to right, and there it is. His first as a Blue Jay, and it comes right here in Baltimore. How good does that feel for him as he rounds the bases and extends the lead 3-0?
I thought Tomo was just kind of missing off the edge. I thought they did a really good job of shrinking the strike zone, and it made him come into the heart of the plate, and when he did, you know, they hit some balls hard off him. Santander was just due. You knew that was going to come eventually. But I just thought he was kind of missing off the edge a little bit and then had to come in right over the middle part of the plate.
Anthony Santander got his first homer as a Blue Jay, crushing a home run off of Tomoyuki Sugano. Santander is still struggling, batting 190, but did get off the schneid as far as the home run's concerned. Sugano, though, man, after what was a start that gave you some optimism in Kansas City, he could not get Vlad or Bo Bichette out to save his life. That's past the Santander home run. 4 2/3, 8 hits, 3 earned, 2 walks, no strikeouts.
Look, this guy is trying to thread a needle that I told you from the beginning, I was a skeptic that he's going to come in and be Greg Maddux, because that's what they need him to be. When late stage career Greg Maddux, like, I'm just not buying it. He does tend to miss center cut, and I saw it at Steinbrenner Field in Tampa, and we talked about it for 2 or 3 days, because I'm like, that's the AL East, and that's not even the Yankees A lineup. And I'm just telling you, everybody's seen him go through the Grapefruit League circuit now. There's that the splitty's gotta be putting people away. Like, they've gotta be chasing in the dirt. They've got to help him out. Because his stuff at this level is not going to get any swing and miss unless they chase. And they're not chasing that much. And his peripherals, like that 3.86 ERA, it's actually a miracle that he's got an ERA that good. Because when you're looking at somebody who's in the bottom 1% in K percentage, the bottom 5% in whiff percentage, the bottom 16% in expected ERA, the bottom 14% in expected batting average, the bottom 23% in average exit velocity off of his pitches, a guy who's not getting nearly as many ground balls as he needs to, given that his stuff is so hittable, a guy whose walk rate is above the league average, and you told me the impeccable control is how he's going to thread this needle, stop it. And you gave him $13 million, and he's your number three starter, allegedly. Well, and he's been overwhelmed in 2 or 3 starts, and he hasn't really faced a great lineup yet, because Toronto came into this series, and we're like, how could they have won all these games and only hit 5 home runs? And really, nobody's hitting there. Like, Vladdy's hitting a little, and Bichette's not hitting at all, and Santander's not hitting at all. And they just slapped the ball around with Alejandro Kirk and Schneider and whoever.
They don't strike out. He struck out one Blue Jay.
They lit him up twice.
One Blue Jay has struck out in 2 starts against them.
And really, out of his 6-pitch mix, the cutter's been effective, but he's gotten lucky with that pitch where it's a 125 slug, but expected slug of 589. And his defense really helped him out a ton over the weekend where they got 3 double plays. It just hasn't been good enough. Their whole rotation has not been good enough. It's been horrible.
In their defense, I wouldn't have signed him either. They did sign him to be their 4. But Grayson got hurt again. Remember, Grayson was supposed to be their ace.
They spent $27 million on starting pitchers on 2 guys who have been an embarrassment thus far.
They've been terrible.
Period. point blank, I don't want to hear about it.
And Sagan, well, you have to because we have to talk about it.
I mean, like, I don't want to hear counter. Like,
yeah.
There's $27 million in those two.
Yeah.
You conscientiously abstain from doing anything real to make me watch this. Yeah. It's not even every 5 days. It's two of every 5 days. And it's a joke. And people already have a book on both of them. And they're not at a point in their career where there's going to be a huge, like, counter to the counter. Like, neither one's going to throw any harder. They're actually lucky Morton's throwing as hard as he is for now.
Sagano's been better of the two.
Better what?
Than Morton.
Yeah, but I mean, this...
No, that just shows you where they are. That shows you where they are.
I mean...
Morton.
And again, if that's what you're... If you're not paying anybody else, and those are the two you choose to pay, and yeah, the hurt guy stayed hurt, like Grayson... And you can't even get five innings out of them. And we haven't even started the season much yet. And your bullpen's already having a lot asked of it. And you don't have a true long man from the right side in that bullpen. I would say you built a house of cards and it started crumbling before you even got it fully built.
Something good that came out of that game Saturday, though, was the Orioles actually showed some fight. They showed some spunk.
Yes.
Kerstad hit his first homer of the year. Adley hits the big homer to tie it and actually shows a little bit of swag. They come back and win that game 5-4.
Yeah. Look, we talked a lot last week about they are front runners, and they've been front runners for a while. And when they score early, they're usually okay. And when they don't, then they tend to have the quality of at-bat deteriorate, and they sulk a little bit and feel sorry for themselves. And that fight isn't there. So that was great to see. Not surprised that Cedric Mullins is the guy who really kind of put it over the top. Very surprised that John Schneider left Bowden Francis in to face Seti from the right side. I'm glad he did. But this team has yet to win consecutive games. And when you don't field the ball consistently well and you don't play with a high baseball IQ more than once a series and your starting pitching stinks and your bullpen, we're going to find out more about the bullpen when we get actual high leverage situations and Felix can't go two straight days like we just saw. And what happened the first time that happened? They blew a game. That's why you're in fits and starts.
Yeah, that's what's disappointing, because it looked like Saturday, okay, can you build off that, pick up that second straight win? You weren't able to do so. And for them, because it looked rough early, and even though they were getting a lot of hard contact off Bowden Francis, it was 13 up, 13 down. They scored all five of those runs with two outs, which was really encouraging there. Felix got the save shaky, had a couple of walks in there, but it felt like something you could build off of. You end up putting up over five runs, which is the magic number over the past year, and then that was the first really bad game from the bullpen, minus CNL Perez.
So real quick, because I framed this question before the season started, and I said, I'm cutting these guys no quarter because this is what they built.
Yes.
Like, where are you on, like, we're coming up 2-3 days from now, we're going to get Morton again, right? And then we're going to get Sagano after that. Are you sick of it yet? Like, how does it look to you?
Let's face it.
I'm sick of the Morton.
Yeah, I don't get as angry as you do about nearly anything, but I didn't like it when it started. I'm on record saying I'd have taken the money they gave to these two mooks and given it to Evaldi and signed a real pitcher. But you know, they didn't do that. Unfortunately, the Morton part of it is more frustrating than the Sagano. Not that Sagano's good. But I said this to you earlier. I said it the other day. Watching Morton in Arizona the other day was painful. Painful.
This is pretty painful to me.
Well, it just looks like a guy that's cooked. At least this guy has the excuse of this is his third start in the majors.
Yeah, he can't pay. I tell you what, he can't get the Blue Jays out. He's had two chances. Can't get the Blue Jays out. We will come back.
How about you give the $13 million to a major league pitcher, a guy who's pitched in the major league?
Yeah.
This actually pisses me off more, because this is them trying to be super smart, and the guy literally left the game with full body, like, sweat/cramps.
That was his first ever major league start.
I don't care. He's 35. Yeah. He's not a 21-year-old rookie.
The whole reason you gave him this money is
he's developed and he's seen it all and he's pitched internationally. He's represented his country. He's got six pitches. Most of them suck.
Yeah, well, yeah.
He's Carmen from Bad News Bears. If you don't know it, look it up.
Yeah. We'll come back at the text of the day. That's a deep cut, though, by the way, Carmen from Bad News Bears. There's a lot of people, like a lot of guys from Bad News Bears. You got to really go down the line. I think he's in the sequel.
I wish he was Kelly Leak.
Carmen's in the sequel.
I wish he was Mathau's daughter. Yeah.
Tatum O'Neal.
Yeah, I wish he was Tatum O'Neal. He's not.
Yeah, yeah. How about
he's
Lupus?
Carmen or Carmine. Was it Carmine
I think it was
or
Carmine. And he's not in the first Bad News Bears. He's in the sequel.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's in like...
He wasn't good enough for the first group. He didn't have enough heart for that group.
No, he was
they
not.
Brought him in as a ringer. They brought him in like, oh, yeah, I got 55 pitches. Yeah, yeah, I can throw the ball between my legs 90 miles an hour.
Yeah,
oh, really?
At the Astrodome.
Can you throw a strike?
Yeah, yeah.
That isn't a meatball?
No, he cannot. He pitched at the Astrodome, though, Jason. He did. I think it was back in training, I think it was that what that was called. And he think, yes. I think Carmine went to Japan, too. There was
Did
the
he?
Third. There was the third.
I've seen that
yeah,
one.
Yeah. Hey, we will come back at the text of the day preview tomorrow's show and get you ready for Infinity Sports Radio at 6 here on the Fan. Before we get the text of the day, I do want to say really quickly, and I may have been the only one that watched it, but the Masters was great theater yesterday. I know you were driving and like. Bone, did you watch it?
I watched the end of it. I had that on my laptop and the Golden State game on my TV.
Ben, did you watch it?
I did. I watched a good amount of the last day on. I had it on the iPad on the side.
It was awesome.
I live bet Rory when he started choking. And it was nice. It was very nice.
He hit some of the best, and I'm not a golf person by any stretch, but he hit maybe some of the best shots and some of the worst shots in the same day, which was incredible. But anyway, let's get to the text.
It's human nature.
Yes, it is.
Text today is sponsored by Orsman Automotive. It's driven by OrsmanCars.com. Your trade is always worth more at Orsman. Shop their entire inventory now at OrsmanCars.com. Text today comes from Chase and Towson, who says, Jeff Hoffman blowing a kiss at the Orioles dugout was the cherry on top to yesterday's loss where the bullpen blew it.
Jeff Hoffman, who the Orioles had signed to a deal and then he failed his physical. Now, I hate defending
him. That would have been a real deal.
The Braves failed a physical on him as well.
Yep.
They weren't the only team to fail him. And it was interesting looking at pictures in postgame. He has a giant thing on his shoulder, which, but he looks good right now.
He shoved twice. He's gotten two chances to shove on them, and he shoved.
Yes, he did.
Now, we'll have to see what the future holds for him. I do think there is a certain irony, however, in the fact that they move off of him and they pivot to Kittredge.
Yes.
And he couldn't get through February.
Yes.
Couldn't get through February without compromising his season. Got ridden real hard by the GM's old boys in St. Louis.
Be back
he couldn't
in June,
get through
Bone.
February.
He's way ahead of schedule.
Before he broke down. Is he?
That's what
he's
they
ahead
said.
Of, how can he possibly be ahead of schedule?
That's what Brandon Hyde said.
Brandon Hyde said he's ahead of schedule.
Did Mike pencil it out this way and he just didn't tell us?
I guess. He's ahead of schedule.
He's ahead of schedule. I don't know. Hoffman looked ahead of schedule to me. I'd say Hoffman. Hoffman, who they said was dead man walking.
Time out.
He looks ahead of schedule.
He looked on schedule.
I don't know. I mean,
he was pretty filthy.
He made it through the Grapefruit League, and he shoved twice against the Orioles.
Ramon Laureano did not look like he won any parts of Jeff Hoffman yesterday.
No. Well, it's another guy.
Yeah.
We're going to do an exercise later this week on, because, you know, the manager, everybody's saying the manager's on a hot seat.
Maybe no.
Well, but, like, who, if this continues, like, June 1st, how many, which deck chairs we shuffling on this old glacier?
Well, Colton Cowser's going to save them all when he comes back.
He's not coming back soon.
He's ahead of schedule.
He's ahead of schedule,
I don't know. I've not heard a schedule update on Colton Cowser. But they're always ahead of schedule. He'll play like one rehab
game. Are Morton and Sagano?
They're behind schedule.
Are they both here? July the 1st,
dude. They didn't DFA Craig Kimbrell a week or two before the regular season.
It's a lot easier to hide a closer than it is to hide a starting pitcher when you don't have any.
I know.
Bone, what do we have on tomorrow's show?
John Mioli will be joining us. Oriole Hall of Famer Mike Bordick will be joining us.
Saw him today spilling coffee.
Bordy's here like all the time. Bordy's a grinder.
Hall of Famer Jonas Schaefer will be joining us. And Daryl Ryder, part of our sister station in Cleveland, will be previewing the Orioles Guardians series as well as talk Browns with him.
Yeah, are they going to get another quarterback? Get another quarterback in that room? We'll ask Daryl tomorrow. Hey, coming up next, don't change that dial. It's Infinity Sports Radio. We'll talk to you tomorrow, too, here on The Fan.